What?
If we have to, can you kill Tiana?
Thargo, what are you talking about?
If need be.
What? I was completely serious then. I'm doing some of the best acting that the world has ever seen. I'm talking showreel stuff, and he laughs in the middle of it.
Americas.
Americans indeed. Hello and welcome to the Frelcast. I'm Erin.
I'm Monica.
And we are the Farscape friends, and we're here to do the season 3 wrap up.
Woo!
Woo! We're both super tired.
It's gonna be great.
We're committed to talking even more about the third season of Farscape, including addressing some listener questions, our own unresolved issues, and of course, some ratings and a surprise quiz. Although it can't really be that much of a surprise anymore, can it?
It's the ratings surprise quiz where you quiz me on my ratings.
Yes.
This is my favorite part of the wrap-up.
Did you study this time? Did you, like,
no.
Remember? Okay.
No.
Okay.
The joy isn't getting caught with my pants down. That's a weird way to put that. The joy is in failure.
Failing with your pants down. That should maybe be the name of our podcast. That should maybe be the name of Farscape.
That should be the name of Farscape.
Anyway, welcome everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We'll have a quick little episode, but we're going to talk about some stuff. Where should we start?
I have no idea where to start. I think that's part of the... This season is just so good and so full of nonsense.
It is. What do you think about this season in comparison to the other two that we've seen so far, just generally?
I think it is the best.
Really?
I get really, like, you know this, the bit on Community, the episode where Abed meets the guy in the bar and they're talking about Farscape?
Paul F. Tompkins and Tig Notaro is the bartender. Yes, my favorite episode of Community. Yes.
You know, like, the part where Abed's talking about, like, when you see the fourth season the fifth time,
yeah.
That's almost as good as whatever. And, like, I became that as I was preparing for this episode. But I think that, like, the third season is the best when you're looking at the construction of the storytelling and the narrative and, like, the way every episode really contributes in some small way to that. And so you get even the episodes that seem to be a little bit less arc related end up being really important or providing really important functions, or giving little bits of detail that help to contextualize the more plotty episodes.
It's definitely the most interconnected season, the most serialized so far. It's hard to look at any individual episode and say it's unrelated to anything else. Which makes the snip snip part very difficult. That will be an interesting segment to tackle in a little bit. So part of my preparation for watching this episode was to go, and I mentioned it last week, there's a special feature where David Kemper talks about every single episode in the season with various people on the crew. And that was an interesting insight into some themes that they were cognizant of throughout the season. And one of the most interesting things that came up was that and this was shot like while they were still working on the show. So they envisioned all of Farscape as a 5-season project.
Mm-hmm.
And this being the middle, they wanted to make it the dark, depressing middle year out of which they would have to, you know, pull and, like, do redemption and do different stuff. And I think they achieved that.
Yeah.
I think things get real, real tough for just about everybody in this one. It's interesting because that pacing is really related to a structure that doesn't end up happening because obviously there's only the 4 seasons. So I don't know. Do you think it maybe it's not appropriate to talk about right now, but do you think overall, without doing any spoilers, that it kind of throws off the balance to have this darkness that they descend into and then we get one more season and that's it?
I don't know that it's exactly throwing off the balance, but I do think that if it had had the fifth season, it would have been a more satisfying resolution, certainly. But I mean, I really like this season. I like that they take it to the dark place. And I think that this is the best season in terms of quality, but if we're talking about the season that I like to watch the most, it's probably the second season.
Okay. Yeah, when I was sort of ranking these, doing my final sort of what's up, I was like, man, this is wildly difficult. Not because, like, the 20th episode in this season is probably better than the, like, 13th episode in the first season, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a few things that we can talk about thematically overall with this one. I think one of the things is we have the season of death, right?
Yes.
That was the name of the first episode of the season. That is the watchword. David Kemper talks about it in this featurette where that really became the theme. Death. And he actually, one of the things he describes is that the only kind of signpost they had for the course of the season was that they knew that Aaron was going to be alive again. They knew that Zam was going to die. They knew that Johns were going to get split. They knew that one of the Johns was going to die. They knew they were going to a command carrier. They knew they were going to blow up the command carrier. And they knew that Krayce and Talon were going to die blowing up the command carrier. But that was all of the... And then they knew how it was going to end with the Aaron and the pregnancy and the wormhole and the alone. Which is that's a lot of, like, death outposts along the way.
Yeah.
Which is definitely different than how previous seasons have operated.
Yes.
Did that ever get, like, too bleak for you? This constant everyone dying all the time?
I mean...
And that's not even all the deaths. Like, Aaron's mother dies, like, twice.
Twice Aaron's mother dies.
Yeah, exactly.
And all their friends in Fractures who they make immediately die.
Yeah. And people and, on the command carrier and...
And people on the med ship.
Yeah.
All 5,000 of them or however many large numbers.
All those nurses in different destinations.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The different destinations nurses. I forgot about them. Like I said, like, this is not my favorite season to watch. It is my favorite season as far as quality goes. And, like, to me, like, the bleakness is offset by how novel it is or was for me at the time to have a TV series that was so richly interconnected and so committed to continuity. And, like the detail orientation that they had to have to pull this off and the way they were building on the work that had been done in the previous seasons, like, that payoff really lightens it for me in a way because I'm watching and I'm inside the story and I'm very sad, but I'm also noticing all these little bits and pieces and being like, oh, like, that's a nice way to be sad. That's a nice way to be sad.
It's a very beautiful and elegant way to
to
be incredibly depressed.
Right. Like, oh, this is really effective and I enjoy good craftsmanship.
Yeah, something you said made me think, like, I'm pretty sure this is the first season where you couldn't watch it without having watched some stuff before.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of jump into season two and get the hang of it. But basically from the beginning of this one and then unrelentingly throughout it, there's not a lot of, you know, places to wedge your foot in the door.
No.
You kind of have to be with it. And maybe that's why they did, like, the Undressed special is, like, we're really going pretty far out. Pack a lunch. Yes. be ready. Don't be caught without your canteen because it's a long, dusty road and we are not coming back for you if you get lost.
Yeah.
Although their previously ons kind of grow to epic length.
They really do. And by the end, I definitely was like, oh my God, can you stop showing me John dying again? I'm already so sad.
Get used to it. It's not going away. We're still going to be seeing that clip for a minute.
God. Ugh. But yeah, like this was the point, I think probably around incubator and meltdown was the time that I thought back to what my dad said when he first found out that I was watching the show, which was the, you know, like, I really liked it, but then it got too weird and I couldn't follow it and I had to give up. And at the time I remember being like, how could it be weirder? There's a Muppet flying a spaceship with more Muppets and a very bossy lady. How could it be weirder? And then I got to like sort of Two Johns and Scorpius and all of it. And I was like, oh, yeah, it got weirder.
It definitely gets weirder.
Yeah.
And it's a double-edged sword because I think for the people that are invested in it as a series, like if we're just talking about it as a piece of television and whether or not it is successfully doing television, I think it's very successfully doing storytelling, but it has that kind of novelization, serialization quality that I think audiences are a little bit better with these days. Like,
yeah.
I heard this really interesting thing sort of arguing that Game of Thrones is a soap opera because it's hard to distinguish episodes. Like, the whole idea of a soap opera is actually just that there is a continuity to the story where any individual episode is more or less indistinguishable from any other episode. Like, you wouldn't necessarily, like, hear the title of an episode and be like, oh, yes, the one with this. I mean, again, I don't really watch Game of Thrones, so I don't know. But, like, from the bit of it that I have seen, it did seem to all run together. And there's just, like, catching in with people throughout without, like, thematically engaging an episode or a single episode around a concept. And you know, Farscape often gets called a space opera, but I don't think it has quite that level of like serialization to it, because an episode is like much more identifiable as a unit, but there is such a heavy like investment in knowing about relationships and subtle little clues. And even if you have seen it 10 times, you might miss some stuff, which we definitely have been discovering. So yeah, it is one of those that we're definitely at the point where I start to be like, is it too much? Are they, I mean, I don't think they're quite there yet. I do think they get there a little bit, which we'll talk about in the fourth season, but it is tough. Because I don't know that anybody watching one of these episodes for the first time is going to want to watch more.
Yeah.
They already have to be invested. And it's great. It's really rewarding if you are invested. But it's really alienating if you're not.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of when novels were first invented, basically, in the 1800s, that, like, you know, Charles Dickens would publish, like, a chapter a week in the newspaper, and it was little stories that built up to a big story, and you're always waiting to see what happened next. And watching Farscape was definitely the thing that got me on my high horse of, like, television is just contemporary novels. Like, It's the same thing. Mm. It's literature. It's storytelling. And, like, I do stand by that, even though I get really snotty about it, which was why I did that voice.
It's definitely operating in a sort of the show in a bit of a liminal space between, like, intense serialization and episodic stuff, which we've talked about before, as far as like that being a sign of the kind of transition in this age of television, and I don't know, maybe audiences weren't super into that at the time, because we all know that as much as we love Farscape, it was not the most commercially successful thing. Although I think at the time it was like sci-fi's flagship, but it was also the Sci-Fi Channel, so
right, not a big flagship. Yeah.
I would get wildly excited every time I would see Farscape mentioned in media. Like, Mo Ryan used to write about it for Chicago Tribune sometimes. Ooh. And she still lists it as one of her favorite shows. And she's a rock star, and that made it always feel really legitimate and cool to me. I remember it was in, like, a Foxtrot comic strip once, and I was like, oh my god, people know what Farscape is.
Oh my god, but that even was as recently, so exciting.
Even as recently as that Community joke, I was like, what are they doing? Oh my god, nobody knows what that is, but I do, and I'm so happy.
I am too, because when I'm telling people about the podcast, it's really helpful to be able to say, you know, on Community, when Abed meets that guy in the bar and he's talking about that really obscure
show.
Stop
calling Paul F. Tompkins that guy. He's Paul F. Tompkins.
That guy, Paul F. Tompkins. Sorry, not sorry. I want to circle back to what you said about the third season being a little bit too dark or too intense, mm-hmm. or too serialized, or maybe some combination of all three. Because I think that the third season as it is really does work for me. But when you get into the fourth season, I think it does start to feel a little bit wearing. It starts to kind of, that's where I start to feel a little bit bogged down. And like the things that happen in the third season all have these really clear genesis points. They're all pretty clearly sketched out as, you know, like it started here and then it went there and then it went to the third place. And I feel like once you get into the fourth season, they start to lose that a little bit because things like I think you said previously that the fourth season does more plot than character stuff. And I think it's when you lose the character drivenness of the plot, I kind of stop being able to follow it a little bit. But we'll get there when we get there.
We will. And we have some character stuff to talk about in this season as well.
What a nice segue.
Well, I want to talk about some specifics, and then we need to talk about some general stuff and some listener questions. But let's talk about Jewel for a second, because season three is Jewel's season. What do you think about that character now that we've seen her whole span over this season?
I love her. I love Jewel. I find her very hashtag relatable.
You also do backflips in bars when you're drunk.
Yes, I do also do backflips in bars when I'm drunk. No, it's like the overwhelmingly pedantic and shrill thing. That's my thing.
You would definitely wail on somebody if something they're responsible for murdered 600 people. I can see you.
I would start that fight. Yeah, I would start that fight for sure. I think that she is a great way to sort of bring an outsider perspective to the crew now that John has really lost that outsider status and become an insider in the uncharted territories. I think we get to see her develop and like adjust to the situation in ways that are really nice and kind of find a role. I love her friendship building activities with Dargo and with Crace, RIP, in the putting together the Boo Light. That was nice. That like she's really trying. And you can see that, and I think the show tries to give her credit for it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. I like, too, that she doesn't do a great job at her trying, but the trying in and of itself is sort of endearing. It's interesting because I think there was a lot of people who still have mixed feelings about that character or some resentment because they saw it as like, well, you're just replacing Zan with this fucking shrill whatever. But one of the things I learned from listening to commentaries and watching, you know, whatever, is that the show, Rockne, really wanted the show to have a rotating door kind of quality. Like, because it's a prison ship, because it doesn't have this, like, established nature that he really wanted. Actually, initially, he was like, I want almost all of the main cast gone and new people in, like, on a regular basis. And I think when you look at the whole span of this series, of what Farscape actually starts out as and ends as, like, that's pretty, you know, there aren't a lot of people that end up in the show that were there from the start. And there are people who cycle in and out. You know, we've seen Stark cycle in and out a bunch, and obviously we've lost a major character with Zan, and you know, there isn't a lot of static, but I think a lot of the sort of blowback against Jewel sort of, I don't know, is a bit unfair, because I also like that character a lot, and I liked her a lot more this time than I did before, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's some good stuff.
I think me too.
There's also a pretty significant change of the Scorpius and John relationship over the course of this series that I think is one of the bigger things to talk about. Like, if you consider the first scene between them, or I guess the sort of final scene of the second season to the final scene between them in this season, it's wild how much of a change there is.
Yeah. Yes. It is truly, truly, like, I hadn't really thought about it in those terms, and now I'm just kind of sitting with it for a second, which is why I'm not, like, saying substantive words. It is, I think so much of that has to do with the two John storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it has to do with the neural chip being gone, right? That I think that once the physical chip is gone and Harvey stops having control over John and being, you know, when the chip is in, Harvey is really an extension of Scorpius. And once that connection is severed, he becomes less of a threat and more of an asset. And I think it recalibrates the relationship because he can no longer compel John to sell out his friends, for instance. You know, taking mind control off the table is a big change to the power dynamic. And then I think with the two John storyline, you have John accessing the wormhole knowledge twice. And that, I think, gives John a little bit more agency. And he also develops this sense of purpose with respect to the wormhole stuff that he doesn't have at the beginning of the season. And I think that the combination of the sense of purpose, the taking mind control off the table, and the being able to access the knowledge, I think it kind of, it brings Scorpius down and it brings John way up. And I think you see a leveling out of sort of the power dynamic there.
Yeah. It's definitely a transition of them getting into this place where they kind of need each other a little bit by the end of the season. And that's an idea that gets explored further, but sort of, there's a lot of, like, sitting next to the devil for that long just, like, makes you, better the devil you know, kind of places where John is. And this collaboration and this sort of almost sympathy he has for Scorpius at times, but also still a fear because believes he would go to Earth and murder everyone. We talked about this a little bit in the ITLD, so I don't want to rehash the whole thing, but it is an interesting sort of scope to put on this of, like, that's a major relationship in this show, and it took a major change over the course of this season. Another thing I want to hit on just lightly is another theme of this season is, like, doubling things. So you have the two Johns, you have the two ships, you have the two bones at the end, you have just a lot of duality going on, which is interesting. I don't know if I have the most interesting things to say about it right now because I'm very, very sleepy, but it is sort of an undercurrent theme of season three. Season three is sort of the season of wormholes, and the season of splits.
Well, you also have three different two-parters,
right,
that sort of segment the season almost in like a parallel way.
Yeah.
The way they're spaced out.
Mm-hmm. And each ends with a death. So the first two-parter is about Zan's death. The second two-parter is about John's death. The third two-parter is about Crace and Talon's death. So there is also a tripling, right? Because there's basically three sections that this season is composed of. Before the split, during the split, and after the split.
Right.
And those are kind of the hallmark stories within that. And they all focus on wormholes, right?
Yeah.
Is the unifying factor is that the whole plot of Self-Inflicted Wounds is that John is bananas for wormholes. IP 1 and 2 is about John getting wormholes. And ITLDs are about John trying to prevent the horror of wormholes. So I think that's another interesting relationship that goes through a change in this is John's relationship to wormholes goes through a very complicated process for both Johns throughout this one. and finding different things to care about and different sort of ways that wormholes fit into his life and scare him and give him hope and make him second guess some stuff.
Yeah.
Another observation I just wanted to throw out there because it sort of didn't really settle with me until I was watching this featurette. But holy shit, did they go a lot of places this season. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know what you mean. Please elaborate.
Like, physically. Like how many episodes are set on another world? Or on a space station? Or, like, someplace that isn't Moya? Or Talad? Even if it's sets or on location, but, like, it's more than half of them easily. Which I think is a big change from season two, especially, where it felt very Moya-bound a lot of the time. Which I guess makes sense, because they were sort of, I don't know, running a lot and poor. But here they're like, oh, let's go to a peace memorial and get drunk and have a vacation and fight your mom in a forest and then also get drunk in a different sad place. Like, there's a lot of that.
And go see Furlow again.
And go see Furlow again. Yeah. So I think this season, one of the things it does is make the world feel a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Not that it was necessarily claustrophobic before, because I think they did a good job of establishing early of, like, look at all these things you've seen, but this one really kind of pushes it even further.
Yeah.
Is there any questions that you wanted to talk about before we move on to some listener stuff?
I would love to talk for a minute about Dargo and Chiana.
All right, let's do it.
I meant that mostly as, like, I would like to talk about Dargo and I would like to talk about Chiana, but then I heard myself say it and I was like, oh, and that relationship also.
Sure.
Should be a topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they have this really stressful, incestuous breakup and then they have to learn to work together and they do a really good job with it. And I think as the result of that, Chiana especially, like, really comes into her own and, like, grows up almost. And I think it's interesting that the conflict in the relationship with Dargo was that Dargo wanted to have this very adult and very well-defined life. And I think it prompted Chiana a little bit to think about the kind of life that she wanted to have and take steps to make that by stepping up in crisis situations, especially. And by sort of keeping the crew hanging together when they otherwise might not have.
That is a good transition into a listener question we got, which talks about liking the character development in this season and asking us what we think of each of the characters' journeys, which is an interesting question. And actually, I will say that Chiana is the one that leapt to mind, and basically the same points that you were making, that she does go through a pretty dramatic transition through this season. And it doesn't seem to be any particular, I don't know, it doesn't seem to be connected to, like, her trying to make up for what happened with Dargo or specifically growing up. But she does sort of, in Zan's absence in particular, kind of fill this other space, and the maturity that she achieves over the course of this and the way that she is supportive and kind to other people by the end in a way that she wasn't really previously. Yeah. I think is really, to be honest, one of the few big character development journeys, I think. That's the other thing, is I was thinking about this and I was like, you know, I feel like the show for the most part has gotten in the first two seasons to a point where the characters are pretty developed. They know each other, they know their routines, they have their dynamics, and there are obviously nuances and changes to that over the course of this season, but we don't go through anything like the kind of transitions we saw from the beginning of a season to the end of a season with any character in any previous season. Like the Aaron at the beginning of season two versus the Aaron at the end of season two is, you know, huge difference.
Yeah.
You know, John in the beginning of season one to John at the beginning of season, end of season one is huge difference. But I don't know that that's necessarily super true of this season. And even if you want to go through talking about somebody who went through a lot, like Aaron, like how much crazy shit did she go through? But the difference between Aaron in Season of Death and Aaron in Dog with Two Bones is subtle, is not big. And in fact, she's kind of repeating herself, right? Because she's pushing John away in both. But in the first one, it's because she died. And in the second, it's because he died.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that that's like a bad thing. It's just interesting that we have gotten to a point with a lot of these characters where it's unrealistic for them to keep doing that kind of big transitioning. And so the sort of biggest transition I could think of is Chiana. And maybe getting a little bit, you know, because Jules knew, we get to learn about her. So that, I think that's a more natural one. And then the only other one I could really think of is John having the sort of very different relationship to wormholes and Scorpius.
Yeah.
But that's not really about him changing that much as a character. It's about his relationship to those two things and their union changing.
Yeah. I mean, I think generally this is a season where relationships develop more than characters.
Mm.
I think we talked about John and wormholes and Scorpius, and we haven't really talked about John and Aaron, but that's obviously a whole situation and we talked about it all season, so maybe we don't really need to say anymore.
Yeah.
Question mark.
Especially because the arc of it kind of puts them in a not dissimilar place from where they started. And again, that's not like a knock. That's not saying they didn't do their job if they didn't move the goalposts. It's just, you know, sometimes you do have to kind of loop with a person in your life a little bit where you go on a long journey, but you kind of end up more or less where you started. And that does feel a little bit like what happened with them this season to me.
Yeah. But I think we see a little bit, we see a huge amount of change in the Dargo and Chiana relationship. We see Jewel develop relationships with everybody on the ship. And I think one of the really nice things that we see is we see the John and Dargo friendship take on a real depth and texture, and we get a lot of time with it compared to, I don't know. I mean, like we had some of it in season two, I think. But like the fractures, I think, for the two of them in their bro time is just,
right, yeah,
just such perfection.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because there is some natural elements of wheel spinning throughout this season, but it is nice to sort of, there's a breadth that has been established about these characters, about in what dimension they're capable of acting, and I think now you're getting a little bit more of the depth of in what situation they're capable of acting in these different ways. And how they react to each other. And I'm never going to complain about that because, as established, that's some of my favorite things about the show is learning more about these relationships and how they change and the little subtleties between them.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. The horn outside loves it too.
Yeah.
Honk if you love character work on Farscape. Another question we got, if we were transitioning into listener questions, is what are our favorite aliens so far? I have such a hard time with questions like this, if I'm honest. I feel really bad. Do you have any in mind?
I mean, does Furlough count? Because, like, we all know I fucking love Furlough.
God. I think the Nabari still kind of are interesting to me.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just because, sort of spoiler alert, we never really get much more Nabari than we've seen. Yeah. So they're kind of this big, I think they were meant to be like the thing that happened in the fifth season, and then they just weren't. So I think that's like the, I would love to like see Nabari society, and like that would be really interesting to me. I love a lot of weirdos though. I love a lot of the weirdo one-off, like the Hanji with his porno eyes that you hate.
Oh, yeah,
so much.
I hate him. I mean, anybody who Francesca Buehler is playing.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Not the creepy murder baby from The Choice. That's my definitive answer.
Oh my god, I hate
the creepy not baby. Whatever the fuck that was. I'm sorry, Dave Elsie, I love you, but that shit gives me
You took
nightmares.
It too far. You took it too far. We were so concerned with whether we could, we did not stop to think about whether we should.
That is definitely how the Creature Shop operates on this show, is like, can we do it? And it's never like, oh, please don't do it. Oh, maybe Mortal from my Sons and Lovers, the big Monterey Jackass barkeeper.
He was a good dude. Liked him.
With his weird Eastern European accent and mustache, and what a good guy. another question we got is about the length of our episodes, which I don't have a ton to say about, but I will quickly address it. They're kind of as long as they are, and we've been doing it for almost 70 episodes now.
Yeah.
So we don't have a lot of Farscape left. We're not planning on making any structural changes, in large part because we are not a professional podcast trying to make money or attract advertisers or anything. It is just about a couple people and maybe sometimes a third person who like talking about something they really love and are passionate about and have really long conversations about. Then we put it on the internet, and if you like it, that's awesome. We're so, it's kind of a miracle that that like people are like, yes, I would like to listen to these two strangers talk for time in excess of the episode's length, in fact, about all of it. But yeah, that's just sort of how it is. I mean, like, to be honest, we, even as long as they are, we edit minimally 20 to 40 minutes out of every episode as is. So,
yeah. You know, to me, this is really just about talking to you about Farscape, which is a great activity and one that I enjoy. And I like doing it in a semi-structured manner. But like, to me, at the end of the day, it's like, oh, I get to record the podcast tonight. I get to talk to Aaron for several hours about the show that we both love. Like,
and sometimes
it's
like
recreational.
And sometimes somebody from the internet who was paid to review it comes and hangs out with us, or another friend that we have comes and hangs out with us, or my brother, or your dad, or like somebody else we met on the internet. Which is really fun to connect with people like this. And I mean, we just, yeah, our conversations are meant to be organic and just naturally we go where we go. And then, yeah, that's just, I mean, that's just how it is. Sorry if it's not your thing.
Some bros talking about Farscape.
Some lady bros. Another question we got is about the promos that we use in our clips, which have an Australian man doing the voiceover, as opposed to, I get the American broadcasts, which featured an American woman.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
The reason we use the promos that you hear is because those are the ones that come on the DVDs, and the ones that are online with the original sci-fi one, like, promos are bad audio quality, and I have to spend a lot of time cleaning them up to take off weird noises and stuff, and it's just easier, and it is exactly the same otherwise. So that's just why it is. So I think we should thank David and Jenna and Nikita for having those questions for us. They also all, contributed to our coffee fund. So thank you all for that as well. Appreciate it.
Thank you, friends.
I also want to give a shout out to a few people who've emailed us, recently, who, didn't have any questions in particular for this, but who reached out to tell us how much they liked the show. And, you know, or rated it on iTunes or whatever, liked it on SoundCloud. So thank you very much, Aisha and Drew and Gabe, We like to hear that you like listening to us. It's very good for our egos.
Yeah, it is.
Makes us feel like we're not talking into the void of the internet quite so much. Again, that miracle of like, oh, you enjoy this? That's wild.
Yeah. Very, very perplexing if I stop to think about it.
All right. Well, I think it might be time, maybe, to move on to the secret special surprise quiz.
Okay. That was aggressive.
Are you ready to engage in the super secret special surprise quiz, which was neither special or a surprise, but it is a quiz. It's not a secret, though.
I think it's special.
It is.
But yes, special. I'm ready. I'm ready to engage.
All right. I tried to think of a fun new format to do this in, but there's only so many ways I can remind you of things you've said before in a funny way. So we're going to go with the same format we had last time, which is a multiple choice situation in which I give you the episode and then three potential answers, and you have to choose which one was yours.
Okay.
Remembering that I am both very funny and very good at imitating you.
Those are both very true statements.
So let's start in no particular order with episode three something. Three, one of them. Incubator. Incubator. Monica, did you?
311.
311. Oh, good job. Did you rate Incubator? A, 2 out of 2 solid burns on John. B, 5 out of 5 extremely upsetting flashbacks. Or C, Hypercube.
You are really good at imitating me. B?
Your answer is B, 5 out of 5 extremely upsetting flashbacks.
Oh, no. I'm going to give it, like, 2 out of 2 really solid burns on John. We are not off to a good start.
I'm so sorry. You're already at a B, which I believe was your concern last time, was you were grading yourself. The answer was A, 2 out of 2 solid burns on John. Next up, Meltdown, episode 312. A very memorable episode.
Yes.
Did you rate it? A, we're flying back into the sun. B, the horniest. Or C, 10 out of 10 LED fingernails.
It was B. I would rate this episode the horniest. LED fingernails was good, though. That was good.
You looked so pleased with yourself. It was really impressive.
Well, so here's the thing. On the first one, I heard you say A, and I was like, oh, that sounds like me. That's probably it. Aaron made a comment recently about how I've always been 2 out of 2 this season. But then the second one also sounded so much like me. That I doubted myself.
Hmm. Good job. 1 out of 2 so far. Let's move on. Green-eyed monster.
Okay.
Did you rate this episode A, all the emotional trauma, B, 1 out of 1 Dranitz, or C, 3 out of 3 uses of the word vomit? Trauma, Dranitz, vomit.
What?
Do you need me to repeat something?
Yeah. Yeah, can you repeat all of it?
Did you rate GEM, Green-Eyed Monster, yes. A, all the emotional trauma? Did you rate it B, 1 out of 1 Dranitz? Do you remember the Dranit?
No.
When the John and Aaron have that conversation, what's a Dranit? You don't know what a Dranit is?
Oh, yeah, that.
That. Or C, 3 out of 3 uses of the word vomit.
I'm going to go with C. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like I would rate this 3 out of 3 uses of the word vomit in Stark's line about riding the wave of vomit.
making a comeback. 2 out of 3. Vomit really clued you in there.
Yeah.
I was hoping you would remember the Dranitz thing, because you were very charmed by that, I believe, when we discussed it. But then, of course, you immediately fucking forgot it, like you do everything.
Yep, that's my jam. That's my thing, is forgetting things. It's just not being able to remember, no matter how hard I try. Just not retaining things.
All right, well, let's hope you can retain the next one, which is Infinite Possibilities Part 1, which you have rated one of the following. A, 1 out of 1, very big wrench. B, furlough. Or C, 2 out of 2, amazing guest cast.
Furlough. I rate this episode 2 out of 2, amazing guest cast. Damn it. You used my love of furlough against me.
I did. I made sure all answers were somehow furlough related. She has the big wrench, she is furlough, and she was an amazing guest cast member.
She was an amazing guest cast member. Shout out BT Dubs
to Magda Zubanski, who is... I didn't quite realize the extent to which she was the face of the marriage equality vote in Australia in many ways, and they did some good things on that this week. So congrats to them. Congrats to furlough. Yeah. I hope she marries a space babe, and they live in a dirty mechanic shop forever, if that's what they would like to do. Lastly, let's see if you can
I do broke even. Can right I bat now. Above 500?
Can you bat above 500? Let's move on to seasons and lovers, sons and lovers, sons and lovers. Did you rate this episode? A, 2 out of 2 hands you can alternate. B, 2 out of 3 peacekeeper euphemisms. Or C, 12 out of 12 rescued alien children.
Definitely not the children. What was B again?
2 out of 3 peacekeeper euphemisms.
I'm thinking. This is a high-pressure situation. I really don't want to be wrong, but I feel like no matter what I say, I will be wrong.
Okay, it's 2 out of 2 hands you can alternate. 2 out of 3 peacekeeper euphemisms.
I feel like it has to be 2 out of 3 peacekeeper euphemisms, because I don't normally do that, so you wouldn't have made up that I only gave it 2 out of 3. But also the hands thing was very funny at the time, but I'm sticking with B. I would rate this episode 2 out of 3 peacekeeper euphemisms. Woo!
You did it!
I did it.
You did it! I'm relieved. You believed and you did it! To be fair, 2 out of 2 hands you can alternate was my joke suggestion after you did yours, and I was hoping that the funniness of that would distract you.
It did. I deliberated for a long time. It was I don't a good know if you noticed.
I did notice. What a fun job.
Yes.
Well, now that we've done your ratings, I'm going to move on to mine, which I will run through really quickly because I don't know if I believe in them, but it's like pulling off a Band-Aid. You got to do it quick.
Okay. I'm here to support you.
Ratings.
Season 3 is tough, man. There's not a lot. The dregs are hard. So here's where we ended up. I feel like you're going to yell at me about a few of these, but that's fine. We'll hash it out in the snip snips. Okay. 22, different destinations. 21, self-inflicted wounds part 2. Number 20, revenging angel. Number 19, incubator. Number 18, seasons and lovers. Why do I keep doing that? Sons and lovers. Number 17, infinite possibilities part 2. Number 16, infinite possibilities part 1. Number 15, Losing Time. Number 14, Meltdown. Number 13, Thanks for Sharing. Number 12, Relativity. Number 11, I Yench, You Yench. Number 10, Eat Me. Number 9, The Choice. Number 8, Scratch and Sniff. Number 7, Into the Lion's Den Part 2. Number 6, Into the Lion's Den Part 1. Number 5, Fractures. Number 4, Green-Eyed Monster. Number 3, Self-Inflicted Wounds Part 1. What a huge chasm between those two.
Yeah.
Number 2, Season of Death. And number 1, Dog with Two Bones. Do you have a thought? I can't tell if you're pausing because you have a thought.
I had a thought, but then it went away. There was one that you said that was much higher than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Losing Time.
I told you I liked that episode.
Okay.
Like, if I'm... I always ask myself when I'm doing these rankings, like, but would I rather watch this one?
Right, right.
And I...
It's a watchable episode.
Yeah, it's very watchable. So it puts it above, like, IP 1 and 2, which I almost never want to watch.
Right.
And they're not so great. That we talked a lot about how they're kind of too. Yeah, so I go back and I listen to all of our ratings and rankings and snipping
I comments
before. So I do some research to support these. But I mean, honestly, when I went back and a lot of my things was like top half or bottom half, and I think I put like 15 episodes in the top half of the season. So
yeah,
it's hard.
It's a good season, which I think makes it very challenging to rate and to cut down to a 13 episode season.
Yeah. I'm going to attempt a top 10 overall so far, but holy shit, I kind of am struggling. I don't know that I know the 9 and 10 slots.
We can do a top 8. That's fine.
Well, I'll say 1 and 2 are Dog with Two Bones and DMD. They alternate, but they are the 1 and 2 for me. We've now gotten there. That will not change. Those will remain crowned atop. Number 3, Nerve. Number 4, Human Reaction. Number 5, Season of Death. Number 6, LATP Part 1. Number 7, Liars, Guns, and Money Part 3. Number 8, Crackers Don't Matter. And then I have kind of a morass of, like, DNA Mad Scientist, Won't Get Fooled Again, LGM Part 1, The Way We Weren't, I think you could throw SIW, Self-Inflicted Wounds Part 1, GEM, like,
yeah,
it starts to get to this place where it's, like, a lot of that is dependent on mood, and it's hard for me to start ranking them as better or worse because they become such different experiences, so... Yeah. That's where my head is, at least. But let's move on to where you wanted to start with our final segment. Snip, 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 scissors. Before we begin, I will say that my top 13 from my ranking and my 13 in the cut have never been more different.
Yeah, I expected that.
They're still pretty aligned, but for the most part, but definitely it's not like, I think last season I was like, yeah, my top 13 are just the 13 you should keep, which is not true this time. I think maybe one was different in season one, so. Do you want to start?
Yeah,
we'll go chronologically.
We're going to start. We're going to go chronologically. I feel the need to also disclaimer that, like, when I was doing this adventure, I was trying to create a coherent narrative season in the spirit of the season. And that meant that I had to cut a lot of episodes that I really think everyone should watch. And I had to keep a couple of episodes that I would rather have swapped out for an episode that I liked more. But, like, you needed it.
Yeah. I had to do the same thing. Like, the whole time I was like, does this make sense to watch as a story? And I think there's no way you could do it without having to be like, oh, you need this detail as well.
Yes.
Just FYI, this also happened. But I think in the end, I'm pretty okay with what I came up with.
Yeah.
So did you keep Season of Death?
I did keep Season of Death.
Good. Me too.
I cut Sons and Lovers.
Okay. Me too.
I cut the first Self-Inflicted Wounds. And kept the second one because that's when Zan actually dies. But I think my preference would be to mash them together so that you have the whole, there's a situation and wormholes and whatever, and Zan dies.
I did the opposite. I kept the first part where you would just tell somebody, and then Zan died. You don't need to see it, though. Because the first part is good and gives you almost everything you need to know about the plot and the conflict, and then you can explain in, like, three sentences what the second part is.
Probably a better solution, honestly. I cut different destinations, which was the easiest decision that I made in this whole situation.
That was also easy for me.
I kept Eat Me.
Me too.
I kept Thanks for Sharing.
I did too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I had to cut Green Eyed Monster, and it did destroy me emotionally.
Yes, I also did the same thing. The exact same thing.
I cut Losing Time, and I was not mad about it.
I cut Losing Time, but I was a little sad.
I kept Relativity.
Me too.
But then I cut Incubator Meltdown and Scratch and Sniff, and that was miserable.
I kept Scratch and Sniff. I cut Incubator and Meltdown, though. Because you need a Moya storyline.
You do need a Moya storyline, and you need something lighter. You really do need it, but I felt like everything else that came after it, you also needed. So, I kept IP 1 and 2.
Me too.
I ditched Revenging Angel, and then I kept the rest of the season.
Oh, so you kept the choice.
Yeah.
I cut the choice, and I kept Fractures through Dog with Two Bones. Yeah.
It also came down to a decision, really, between sort of, like, the choice, I-Yench, You-Yench, and Scratch and Sniff were sort of the three that I was circling. And in the end, I feel like when we talked about it, you convinced me that the choice was really, really
integral.
That's
so funny, because I ended up cutting it when I was like, it's really important. But as jarring, I mean, it's a little bit jarring, yeah, to go from one to the other. But I think the idea that we have around this is like, hey, if you want a shorter version of this season, here's what to do. And if there's still stuff you are like, well, wait, what happened here? And I think if somebody's having the question, well, what happened with Aaron? Which is not necessarily going to be everybody's question. I personally would be like, well, what the fuck happened between that? Did she just go straight back? So the idea that there is, oh, no, there's this little pocket episode that you can go to that does the whole emotional evaluation. But because it's such a repeat of, like, what happened with her mother already in Relativity, like, you can kind of just be done with that storyline. And I think if you, again, just have a few sentences of, like, there's an episode between these two where Aaron goes off by herself and gets really drunk and has a lot of emotions and mourning and is really lovely and has these beautiful moments and it's a great character piece and Claudia Black is fucking incredible in it. Watch it if you want to watch it when you're done with the story of the season. But I just, you don't have anything happening on Moya.
I don't have anything happening on Moya.
See, and that's the thing, I couldn't, that was the choice I had to make, was like, either keep this nice emotional piece, or you just ignore that Moya had a storyline for the whole season, and have three episodes on Talon.
Yeah, it's not the best decision, but it is the decision that I made. But I really think that, like, I'm not super thrilled with, I think, any 13-episode configuration of this season. Mm-hmm. And I think that really speaks to what we were talking about in terms of the ways that they sort of, like, really push the boundaries of what television is and can do.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially because we talked about it, that this triptych structure.
Yeah.
And if you want each of those parts represented and each of those parts have, like, both central and secondary emotional hubs to them. You know what I mean? Of, like, you have the Zan death, you have the John death, you have the Talon Crace death. And those are all in two-parters. So that's, like, six episodes already. That's half of your 13 cut if you want to, like, include all of the stuff around that. But then you also have a bunch of other plots stuff happening. Like, oh, when Aaron is alive again. And when John gets split in two. And when they blow, you know, when they do two different ships that they're on, like, and some of that is easier to explain by just being like, here's the episode where it happens, and some of it's like, go back to it if you need to, but we're actually more in sync than I thought we'd be. We had two differences.
Me too. Yeah. And I mean, like, the self-inflicted wounds thing, that's like hardly a difference.
Interesting. But that's... I mean, three of these were not in my top 13.
Right. I really can't believe you cut the choice. I mean, like, I can believe it. I'm just surprised. And I'm processing it.
I mean, at the time, I said it has an honorary... I was like, I'm putting it in this honorary place of, like, I want to keep it there, but I don't know if it will live. I don't know if it will make it. I gave you a warning.
You did give me a warning, but I forgot it because that's what I do.
And it's in... It's in... Hold on. Let me shuffle through all my papers. It's my number 9 for the season is the thing.
Right. Right. It's like a... It's an episode that I know you like a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an episode I like. I think I had to defend it more to you.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because you came in just chugging haterade about it. And I was like, no. Lacey wasn't here to defend it even more vigorously. So I had to.
It was too bad.
Sorry again, Lacey. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it. That's our wrap up, I think.
Yeah. Time to wrap up the wrap up.
Yeah. And thank you everybody again for listening to the show and giving us support and feedback. It's a small milestone, but we recently hit 10,000 listens or plays or whatever it is that SoundCloud counts, which is kind of wild again. So that's super awesome. And, you know, thanks if you're out there listening to us and letting us know. We're being quiet about it. Just cool. Hi.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Monica, you can do the socials and we'll get out of here.
Yeah. You can find us on Twitter at Frelcast Show. You can email us at frelcast@gmail.com. You can listen to us at soundcloud.com/frelcast and on iTunes and in Google Play. And if you would like to tip us $3 to help with hosting fees, we are at ko-fi.com/frelcast. That is ko-fi.com/frelcast.
Yes. And we, as a reminder again, are going to be off next week because of the Thanksgiving holiday here in the America place. But we will be back with season 4 and a special guest on December 4th.
Yes.
Yes. So, yes. Thank you, Monica, for extending our season 3 conversation. What a fun journey it's been.
Thank you, Aaron, for reminding me of all the great things I've forgotten.
Of all the great things you've said that you had forgotten.
And the things that you said, and the things that John and Aaron said. There were a lot of things.
There are a lot of things you forget, it's true. Thank you, audience, as always, and we will see you next month. Bye!
Bye.
12 million pixels per frame. The full range of human emotion. And I give you this.